Hello and welcome to the MB Om podcast, where you will learn to master the business of yoga with guests from around the world who have experienced becoming successful yoga teachers, studio owners, and much more. Now, here's your host, Amanda Kingsmith.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the MB Om podcast. My name's Amanda and I'll be your host for this and all episodes of the show. This episode of the podcast is brought to you in part by Be Yogi. Be Yogi is an online resource dedicated to providing yoga teachers and students with the inspiration and information and insurance they will need during every step of their yoga journey. Be Yogi has drawn from their knowledge of the yoga world to not only create incredible content, but to also provide yoga and wellness professionals with the insurance coverage they will need to expand their careers. And I don't know about you, but I know that I run into a lot of places that won't let me teach or offer anything if I don't have insurance. So this is definitely something that if you don't have, you'll want to get. And they have an incredible things like online teaching coverage. So no matter what style you're teaching or wherever you are in the world, give yourself a little peace of mind knowing that you are covered should something happen. Head on over to beyogi.com/MBOM, so MBOM, to learn more or to get coverage today. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you in part by Schedulicity. This week, we have the Schedulicity Hot Tip of the Week, all about workshop waitlists with Caitlin. Here it is.
Hello, yoga business badasses. This is Caitlin with the Schedulicity Hot Tip of the Week. Try out Schedulicity's waitlisting if your workshops are filling up. When someone tries to book space online for a workshop that's full, they'll be invited to join the waitlist. You'll see them in the order in which they join, so you can easily work on a first-come, first-served basis. If you have a cancellation, you can pull your waitlist clients into your workshop and they'll automatically be sent a notification telling them that they made the cut. Keep your workshops full without keeping your roster on your mind.
And of course, if you are interested in Schedulicity, head on over to Schedulicity.com or send them an email at support@Schedulicity.com. They are my absolute favorite booking software. So if you are looking for something like that, definitely go check them out. All right, one more quick announcement before we dive into this episode of the podcast. I announced a couple of weeks back that I'm co-leading a retreat in Costa Rica this fall with Megan from Balanced by Megan. It's designed for people like you, yoga teachers, wellness professionals, and people who are really looking to spend a week somewhere beautiful, somewhere tropical with like-minded people. There's nothing like being in the community where you actually feel like you belong. And I know as a yoga teacher, that's definitely been something that as I transitioned into my yoga career, I had to find that. I had to find my yoga teacher friends, and I continue to seek those people out in each new destination that I go to around the world. So Megan and I are both avid travelers. She fell in love with Costa Rica a number of years back, and we decided to host a retreat there. So we're going to be there from November 2nd to 9th, 2019, and we're going to be in Nusara, Costa Rica at Bodhi Tree Yoga Resort. It is an absolutely stunning location. So if you feel like this might be something that you're interested in, or you're wanting to get away for a week, or if you're Canadian like us, and that's basically already winter for you, definitely head on over to the website to check it out. You can go to mbomyoga.com/retreats or to go directly to the booking link with more information about everything, pricing, etc. You can go to bit.ly/yogateacherretreatcr, and there'll be links for all of that in the show notes. Of course, if you have any questions about it or, you know, anything that we're going to be offering with that, please don't hesitate to just send me an email at info@mbomyoga.com. All right, on to today's episode of the podcast. I'm really excited to be joined by Krimena Jordanova from Your Yoga. Krimena joined me all the way from the Netherlands, even though she's originally from Bulgaria. And on this episode of the podcast, we talk about her journey with yoga, how she discovered yoga when she moved to the Netherlands in 2006, how she later began teaching, and how the evolution of her career went, going from a regular practitioner to a teacher, and how she's been able to build a business in a country that's not her home country. We talk about how to find your authentic voice as a yoga teacher, how to create meaningful relationships on and off the mat. We talk about things like yoga retreats and building out programs and that sort of thing, as well as the business lessons that she's learned throughout her career, of course. Krimena is super, super inspiring. She's got a really, really beautiful business that she's able to run in the Netherlands, but really all around the world with her programs and offerings and retreats and training. So I hope that you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed chatting with her. So without further ado, here is Krimena. Welcome to the podcast today, Krimena. I'm really excited to be chatting with you.
Hi, Amanda. Hi there.
And where are you joining me from today?
I'm currently based in Amsterdam. Not so sunny, but quite a rainy day today. The mood is good.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully it was good for working today, and maybe you guys will get some sun soon. Are you originally from Amsterdam?
No, I'm originally from Bulgaria, and I moved here 12 years ago. Oh. Not initially in Amsterdam, but in Den Haag, which is another city here in the Netherlands.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. I've been to Den Haag before.
Oh, wow. Super cool.
Yeah, yeah. One of my friend's parents moved over there for work. So I went, oh my gosh, it was like 2008, so like 11 years ago. But yeah, really, really cool city. So yeah, that's awesome. I guess that's kind of like home for you now then, hey?
Well, it turns out I spend a lot of time thinking of escaping the Netherlands because of the hostile weather. But actually now I really enjoy it. So I'm here already 12 years and it does start to feel like home finally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. And I'm curious, what first inspired you to kind of get into yoga? Can you tell me a little bit about your yoga story?
Mm-hmm. So my first yoga class, actually, I took here in the Netherlands when I moved back 12 years ago. I didn't have any friends. I did not have many. I didn't have a job, really. I wasn't allowed to work, and it was very tough time for me. I really didn't know what to do with my life. I was lacking direction, and I just ended up in one of the gyms that was next door. And next to so many other classes, they were offering a yoga type, or it's a combination with Pilates and yoga and mindfulness. And I ended up in one class and got hooked. It was back then when I realized this is going to be a big chunk of my life. Maybe not knowing that I'll become a yoga teacher or anything like that, but I really felt like I belonged when I went to the first yoga class already.
Yeah.
So 12 years ago here in Holland.
Wow, that's amazing. And what kind of like inspired you to become a yoga teacher?
I consider that it happened organically, in a sense of I love the practice so much. I was doing it as a practitioner for a few years before someone noticed me on the mat in the gym. I found a job in the meantime, and therefore I was a little bit, okay, let me combine the, during the lunch break, can I do some yoga in the gym? And they allowed me, and I would just spread my mat and do some practice that I didn't know was a unique flow or anything like that. I would just stretch from what I've known from other classes. And someone approached me and asked, are you the yoga teacher here? And I actually never thought about it before. I said, well, no, I'm not. And then they asked, do you want to become one? Because we're seeking for a yoga teacher within the organization. And this is back in 2008. And funnily enough, I'm still in the same company and I'm still teaching most of my colleagues. Literally yesterday, we had a class of really, really exciting students. And to think of it that more than a decade ago, we started with this and now the classes are full is a little bit, it's beyond my expectations. I always get very emotional when I teach because I know how yoga changed my life, and I can't stress enough the importance of finding what moves you, finding what's your true passion. If it's yoga, I'm really happy. We'll have even more things to speak about. But if it's not yoga, find something else that moves you, that really excites you, that you can't wait to wake up and go and do that thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's really inspiring to hear. And so you became a yoga teacher, and then did you start teaching right away, or how did that kind of go for you?
So this is the thing. I wasn't even sure I was teaching back then, because it was more about, okay, I really would like to have a stretch during lunchtime, and then some people will come and ask me, can I join, and what is it that you're doing? None of us really knew any of the postures or the names, and to be honest, none of us even knew the old benefits that come around it. I just felt like my body needed a place to rest and a place to become aware of the breath. And I had to really find that space where I could practice on my own. And then people will gradually and organically join me. At the beginning, it was one or two people. Then more people started asking, hey, when is the class? And before we even put it as a class on the schedule, there was a little group of people that I worked closely with, and I would beg them to come and practice with me after I actually submitted my, I wanted to become a teacher, but I was a little bit scared to do the teacher training. So it was very nicely that someone else believed in me before I could believe in myself. So the company I work for actually subsidized my first yoga teacher training, and that was the gate opening for me to really believe that I can do this thing and I have something to say on the mat, off the mat, around the mat. And in the beginning, I would just ask my colleagues to join me because I had to practice for my final exam, mm-hmm. which I have to say, the first exam I actually failed. Many people don't know that, but my first Ashtanga teacher training, I failed the first exam because I don't know why actually, but I was so nervous. And I had this complete blackout where none of the Sanskrit words will come to me. None of the things will come to me. And I remember clearly I was so upset about it because surely this is my passion and I can't be failing in something I love so much. And then again, you do. So I think on the second attempt, I actually nailed it. But on the first one, I totally failed. Mind you, it was in a language that I didn't understand quite well. So I followed yoga teacher training in Dutch. And for those of you that know me, my Dutch is really not there yet, although I've been here more than a decade. So there were a few things that becoming a teacher or even thinking of yourself as a teacher, someone needs to believe in you. At least that's what my story was. Yes, I was doing some practices and yes, some people were joining me, but to actually subscribe and to go for a teacher training was a big deal for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't even imagine doing a teacher training exam in another language. I feel like, you know, learning to kind of shift your vocabulary is hard enough in your native tongue or a tongue you speak fluently. So, and then on top of that, having to like kind of translate Sanskrit on top of speaking Dutch, I feel like would be really challenging. I'm curious. Oh, go ahead.
I went for actually 2 years before I could go to the teacher training. So I started giving classes in 2008. I only finished my yoga teacher training in 2012. So prior to that, I was going to school for Dutch just to be able to go to that school for Ashtanga. And mind you, Ashtanga is not even the style of yoga that I actually now practice or can teach. So it's funny how things work. I spent 2 years learning a language with the main goal of obtaining that teacher training program, which I actually failed in the end with the first attempt. The second I passed it, but yeah, it's super funny how things go. By the time you find your own style, by the time you find what is it that really moves you in that practice, it takes longer. And it's not with the first yoga teacher training. It's not with the second, maybe not even the fifth one. It's finding that, what is it that you have to say about the practice that is unique only to you? And how do you see the postures as a tool to understand deeper things about yourself? So I'm much more keen on speaking about that nowadays. But in the beginning, it was all about, I want to obtain that diploma in a style of yoga that actually does not resonate anymore with me. But in the beginning, it was the more physical practice, so to say.
Yeah.
So it's funny how things turn out.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm curious, like that just, it sounds like you put like a lot of time and effort into that. Was there ever any point where you were like, maybe this isn't worth it?
Well, that's the only time when I was thinking that, oh, this is a major fail, was that one exam. And to be honest, I remember clearly the teacher, he was saying to me, oh, you'll be a great teacher, just you need to get to know the flow the way it is taught in the books. And I've been really struggling with remembering why they have to be same exact structure. And I didn't know back then the difference between vinyasa, the difference between ashtanga. I really went to this first course of yoga because it was A, the most obtainable for me, and B, within that I could learn also the Dutch language, which didn't happen, to be honest. But so the disappointment there from the exam only teached me to kind of find my own flow, find my own way of expressing what is this thing that I'm trying to do with yoga. If I don't want to be doing always the standing postures followed by the forward folds, followed by, like, yeah, can I be creative on my expression of what yoga is to me? And only later on in the 2012, I found someone that I could really relate to. And I've been looking for mentors for quite some time before I actually found out that Tara Stiles, who is the founder of Strava Yoga, she was signed by Reebok at the time. And many of my colleagues went to Boston for the first yoga class with her as a part of initiating her contract with us. And everyone that was coming to my classes was saying, you love this chick, you have to go to her class, she's amazing. Back then I wasn't in Boston with them. And I couldn't wait for her to be in the Netherlands to see why everyone was saying that it's so similar. And to be honest, when I met Tara, I kind of knew what to expect because the flow goes so smooth and so, it's very intuitive. And back then, when I met her in 2012, I knew that I would like to do more Strava than Ashtanga and figuring out my own flow, really.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That makes sense. And I think that, you know, most yoga teachers kind of go through this like process, especially when they're new, of having to kind of find their voice as a teacher. And I'm curious, now that you've been teaching for so many years, what are some ways that you can find your authentic voice as a teacher?
The way I see it and the way I really conduct my classes is that people sense everything. In a sense, you cannot be authentic, or at least people don't fall for that. You cannot make another, like you sound the way you sound, and you can't making things up, or you can't be not authentic with who you really are, and you bring your vulnerability and things that you do and the way you conduct everything. So the way it happened to me was that because I started teaching first in the office before any other yoga studio, most of the people who know me is this really harsh and very demanding person at work. And then when I start teaching the class, I would automatically change my voice, like literally change my voice to sound a little bit more zen, and people would be super shocked and they would be like, wow. And I'm like, yeah, that's my yoga voice, but as a joke. But to be honest, if I now see myself in any environment outside of the yoga mat, I actually keep the same voice. So what happened at the beginning of my so-called yoga career was that I had to pretend I'm someone else on the mat, or it was this sense of, now I have to sound a little bit more zen because this makes me calmer. And it translated that I actually have all the conversations the same way I teach my yoga classes. So it's weird how things turn out again, that now everyone, when I ask them, well, why do you come to my classes? And they're like, because you're real, because the same way you talk to me on the mat is the same way you talk to me if we grab a coffee. And finding that unique voice that you have is, if you would like to share something that only you can share, there is no need to not do it, because people are coming to your classes for a reason, and that's the authenticity in what you have to say, what you have to show them. And it's not about postures. It's about so much more than that. I like making the eye contact with each and every person that comes to my classes, because it's not that we can take lightly that they spend 1 hour of their day with us. Nowadays that everyone is so distracted by social media or God knows what, and spending an hour with someone dedicating something that's so special is our time, I don't take it lightly. So the small example of just acknowledge that they're there, not for me, they're there for themselves, and to really speak my truth, why I'm there also. Each class starts with intention, and I always remind myself, why do I really like doing this? And if I notice that things shift and I'm not in a good mood to be teaching, I much rather cancel the class than be there and be faking something that is not authentic.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think that for sure makes sense. And I think, you know, it's always interesting because when you're newer to teaching yoga and you're teaching your first couple of classes or even in your first couple of months, it's really hard not to just kind of like repeat what you've been told in teacher training or repeat what your teacher has told you. Do you have some tips for kind of, you know, if somebody's listening and they're kind of in that phase of just starting to kind of like play around with what your voice is? Because it's kind of scary when you start, like, there's all these people looking at you and they're kind of relying on you for directions. And like a lot of times it's just like, okay, I just need to get them in the pose. But then I think we get kind of comfortable with that and we start finding that there's space to add in these other things, but we always don't know what to say.
Yeah. I actually mentor a lot of new yoga teachers, and we always make this conversation around, there are so many ways to put someone in child's pose, is what you have to say around it. Yes. And to your point, most of the time as a new teacher, we start thinking about how to safely bring them to the ground or how to leave them. And for some reason, we all use the 5 or 7 verbs that just happen to work for us. And with years and with time, they become really part of ingrained vocabulary that you use and people understand you. But in the beginning, I would say I use humor even now. They don't have to be in the beginning, but even if you mess up or if you, I often find that people didn't understand left and right. So no matter how you say it, left hand and right leg and whatnot, there will always be someone facing the opposite direction. And that's fine. As long as you find a humorous way to portray that it's okay to make mistakes, and it's okay if I forget the inhale and exhale, and it's okay if you actually are being vulnerable and you admit that, for instance, you skip one flow or something happens. Because what we often do in the beginning is that we start thinking that we're put there in a position that we should know it all. And actually, it's an exchange of energy. As you teach and you give energy to your students, they give you back. So I always say to new yoga teachers is like, think of that exchange of energy that you should be replenishing yourself with energy while you're teaching it. So if for whatever reason the flow doesn't go, or you have a day that, you know, just things are not working the same way you would plan them, stay with the uncomfortable moment where a mistake happens, admit it, make a joke out of it if you can, because it's easier to get yourself lightly than to punish yourself for not doing the right thing, or and not being too sensitive, because there will always be people that won't like your flow, especially if you are put in a situation where you have to teach 50 people and they come for different reasons there and you can't please everyone. But if you have structure and intention for the practice and you can bring it across, even if one person gets you, there will be the person that had to get you that day. So, yeah, you come from that experience of speaking your truth, whatever comes out and whatever needs to be challenged that day, it will come. And you might repeat the same thing 15 times for the last month, and then on the 16th time, someone will hear it, although you said the same words, but on the 16th lesson, they will hear it. And something will click in them and they will be having these aha moments that often as a teachers, we have students coming back and saying, you remember that class, you said this and that, that really resonated to me. And even now I get goosebumps thinking of how we affect people and how not lightly we should take our responsibility as being in front of a class.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I love all of that. I think that that's all like really, really good advice and just good stuff to be thinking about. You know, if you're a new teacher, if you're teaching, feeling a bit stale, you know, any of that sort of stuff. And so, you know, kind of going back to your yoga career. So you start teaching in the Netherlands. And what was it like kind of like creating a following and building a business in this country that's like not your home country?
Yeah, I've never thought about it that it would be difficult or easy, because for me, and I've never considered it as a business till very recently, to be honest with you, because it's always started as a passion of mine and I still maintain my full-time job and I love what I do within the company. But it happened organically that people would just ask for more classes. I actually started in the office where there was not even a fee or anything like that. I didn't need to know how to do the taxes or the invoices or none of that. So I could really foster this passion for teaching at the beginning. So I didn't have to worry about the business part till later on, when I actually start teaching in a same gym. I did my first yoga class actually back then in Den Haag, and then a few other yoga studios in Den Haag. When you establish yourself, the following will come. And what I normally say for new teachers is only teach in studios that you would like to be part of. Like if you would be paying a fee to go for their yoga classes there, this might be a good place for you to teach as well. The more comfortable you feel in the environment you're teaching, the better it is. And then people will resonate with the fact you feel at ease and you feel at home teaching in a studio that is welcoming. The way I do it is that I select very few places that I can be found, and I stick to it. If I believe in a studio and I'm lucky enough to have great partners here in Amsterdam that allow me to be authentic to what I think about yoga and express it in my classes, regardless what they're called and which style I'm teaching at the specific hour of the day. So building your community is with consistency, and we love traveling, but there is always this base to come back. So for the first 6 years I was in Den Haag, and I created there a following by simply saying yes to any class that was given to me. If you would like to be subbing here or there, you say yes so that people get to know your name and get to know who you are and what you stand for. But then eventually after a few years, and you know, when you have a waiting list on your classes, you know you're doing something right. And then it's time to really stick to what makes you really happy. So you don't have to say yes to every class that maybe is not on the same district where you live and you need to spend 3 hours to go there just to give one class, and then you're exhausted to come back home at 11. So those things, in order to build your name and to build your credibility as a teacher, I would say at the beginning, say yes to everything, because you quite not know what you still stand for. But once you find something that works for you, stick to it. And people will find you. People will know that every Saturday or every Sunday you're here and you're there. And we all have teachers that we cross half of the city to go just for their class. And to become one of those teachers is nothing less or more than just be consistent with what you do and have the true intention that it's not about how many people you have. It's about how really passionate they are about your teachings. And also to know that if they stop coming to your classes, doesn't mean anything about you as a teacher. It means that you've taught them all you had for the time, and maybe they moved on to some other teachers and you served your purpose in their life, in a sense of you gave them all you could.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's so much good stuff in there. And I'm curious, you mentioned that you have kept your full-time job. What was it like kind of, you know, practicing this, like saying yes to everything while finding this balance of working full-time as well?
So basically, I didn't have any private life. That's the easiest answer to the question. Saturday, Sundays, it will be packed with yoga practices and workshops. And then in the evenings after 6 o'clock, most classes are anyway in the afternoon here or in the evening even, because I like to serve people that have a full-time demanding jobs, because I relate more closely to that same audience as myself. I do believe that yoga is for everyone, but much more accessible to people that have demanding jobs, because I'm one of those people. And I can talk their language and I can relate to the fact that maybe 5 minutes meditation is not fast enough for them to relax and to forget all the emails that they still have to send. So when I say yes, it's been always classes after 8. By the time you go home, it's 11. The next day you wake up again at 6, you do your practice, you go to work. But this routine of having something to look forward to, which will be your class, which will be something you're crafting, and it's your really where you put your passion and time and dedication. It never feels like working, and it never feels like, I never thought that I'm working on a business back then. I just wanted to share what yoga meant to me and what I was learning in my teacher training. Only maybe 5 years ago, I could think of it, well, we started doing more retreats, and the deeper work starts with bringing people outside of their environment. And I found people that could support my ideas around the fact that you can be attending on your mat and you can travel the world and you can still have a demanding job, and you don't have to choose to be one or the other. You can be both and you can be so many more things. But building a business is finding the right partners and really trusting that if your intention is right, people will find you and the right people come in the right moment. So if you're planning on something, launching a big course and no one signs up, which can happen, this doesn't mean that you still don't have a good offer, or this doesn't mean, it just means that timing maybe is off. Relaunch it again, launch it again. If you believe in what you have to offer, people will show up. And if the intention is not to just find the students for the bucks or for the money or for, if your intention is pure, people relate to that and they come back for even more. So if I would have one advice, will be find your why you do this, what you do with whatever offering you have in terms of yoga practice or service, or you're providing something for others, and they will come back for more. You'll have so many students that you'll not be even able to maintain their demands of going for retreats here and there and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And so you've said a couple of times that you haven't really like thought about your, I guess, like quote unquote yoga business as a business until the last couple of years. And I think that this is a really common thing for yoga teachers. Like they go into yoga because they're passionate about it, and they don't go into it because they want to necessarily like build a business or do accounting or do marketing. I'm curious, like what kind of shifted for you to actually think about it as a business? And I guess part two to that is like, were there any kind of challenges with that mindset shift?
In the beginning, I was even embarrassed to ask for charging people for my services. And to your point, we do as yoga teachers have this tendency of not paying attention to the rest of the either be a structure or payment methods, or there's so much to do if you're a full-time yoga teacher. So the way I play it and the way it works for me is that I maintain the passion of yoga to be what it is, but to be also rewarded for my time. Because when you see that students actually value your time, and valuing it is, you can say, you can put a price tag to it, but there is more than that. So if I spend 1 month learning something new and I would like to put it out there as a program, I should be rewarded in terms of the time that I'm putting into it comes back. And yes, we use money as a currency for our time, but it's mostly what value you put into people's lives. If learning a headstand is something that people really want to learn and to find out, and you have a program like that, putting it out there and being charging them, it's actually servicing them. It took me quite some time to realize that by me not charging people is actually doing injustice, not just for myself, but for them, because people are more willing to take all the learnings if they pay for it. When it's for free, often we start thinking, even if it's the same content, and I've done it many times, same exact workshop. One time you don't ask them for money. The next time you ask them for money, totally different outcome for them. So, and we should be able also to support ourselves with our passion. But in my case, I have the full-time job that allows me to pick up only the projects that excite me. So if I want to go on a retreat in Bali, or if I want to go in a retreat in Sicily, I can still do it, but I can invite my best students to join me, or the students that will need to be on those retreats to come and join me. And that's how I see it, as being a business, in a sense of I put it out there. Whoever wants to come and join me, there are fees, but they are not as high as, I don't know, to make a big profit. I've never seen it as like in the first quarter of this year, I'll make 15,000. No, it's all about what energy and what feelings I would like to get out of it. And then it happens that it just over exceeds what you've planned. The amazing people show up. There is waiting list for retreats just because you know why you're putting it there. And you need to convey the message that this is beneficial for them without trying to sell it too much, if that makes sense. But marketing for yoga teachers is really, really a big, big challenge. While staying authentic to who you are, you still need to be charging for your time. And if you value your time and you value what you have to offer, people know it and they're gladly and happily paying for that. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All like really good kind of more complex topics. And, you know, bringing up marketing, I think too, is one mm-hmm. of the things that I feel like in my experience, yoga teachers struggle with the most. And even for myself, like personally, I feel like it's, you know, when you love something a lot, you just want people to do it. You don't necessarily want to worry too much about like the money side or like the copy that you're writing and that sort of thing. Do you have any like marketing tips or marketing strategies that you use that kind of help you stay authentic to what you're doing and kind of communicate your offerings in a way that you feel good about?
Yeah. I mean, for me, you mentioned copy, and I think it's a big deal, because when you basically, yeah, you can use any images and they speak volume, but I like to use the fact that I write my copy the same way I talk to the people that come to my classes. And that's where the authenticity comes. In the beginning, I'll be thinking way more harder. Oh, how do I package this? Or how do I speak about this retreat? Or how do I, you know, just explain it the way you would explain it to a student of yours, or even better, a friend of yours. Because people will spend time. The biggest offering I have is retreats, and those are usually much bigger price tags attached, just because the travel and the locations we are choosing. But if you explain it to the people the same way you would tell it to a friend, without trying to sell it too much, but if I only have two spots available, I do injustice to them not telling them that, because often people come back and say, I didn't know you were, and to me, I always think, but I told you three times I'm going to Sicily, why you're not coming? Or like, oh, everyone is surprised that, oh, you're gone now for this retreat. I didn't even know. Sometimes as a yoga teachers, we think that we're quite clear in our communication when and where we're going. But there is so much chatter, and there are so many other things that are coming in people's lives. So you reminding about the good offerings you have is only making justice for the students that would like to take part. And if they are super well informed about your calendar, that's great. If you see them on a weekly basis and you speak and you have that relationship with your students, which I'm happy to say I do have, it's great. But there will be so many people that never heard about you and would still benefit from joining you. So speak to them the same way you would speak to your friends, saying this is an amazing house, and explain a little bit about the environment. And instead of trying to sell it, just explain them how they'll feel about it when they are there. And all of us need some time to rest, and all of us need some time to be not so much convinced, but given the opportunity to know what they'll get out of it. So what's your value proposition? Titles on anything you offer are super important. Especially nowadays, if you have only a split second to grab people's attention, if you have a retreat in Sicily and if you have a retreat in Bali, what is unique and what is it that you would like to put out there that it will stick in people's mind, and they will not be thinking about someone else's retreat that is happening at the same time. So copy is important, visuals also, but on the visual side is less is more, according to me. I try not to bombard my audience with too many yoga poses and too much of my face, and just if you have something relevant to speak about and you want to share it, just do share it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all of that. I think that that's a great way to kind of like blend business and yoga teaching in a way that kind of allows you to stay like true to yourself, true to just what you're passionate about. And I think that it definitely is, it becomes a little bit murky when like you go into yoga, have this great experience, decide you want to share it with other people. And then it's like, oh, well, it's like, how much do you charge for a private? And you're like, oh, I don't know. Or like, I want to go on a retreat with you. How much do you charge? And you're like, I don't know. And then you got to start thinking about, you know, what that time and energy is worth and what that exchange is like. And I think that's when it becomes a little bit tricky for teachers, but I love all of those tips.
But to be honest, on the, we made many, many mistakes by the time we managed to get out of the thinking, oh, we wanted to provide retreats that are affordable, because I usually say, if I can't afford to go somewhere, I'm much more likely not to even go. So we started with going to places, keeping the prices relatively low. And what happens then is that you end up in locations that are not optimal for what you're trying to make as a program. For instance, if you are hosting a retreat, always make sure there is a detached yoga studio, because the weather might not be good and then you might end up doing a yoga class in the living room, but then the living room is cold, or the other way around. So I always say location is super important, especially for retreats. If you already know your yoga studio that you're teaching and that's a given, then you need to be only focusing on your content. But if you're bringing people outside and if you're making sure that they need to be comfortable and at ease, you have to choose places that you'll be comfortable and at ease. And having all the props and not wondering if you have enough blocks or if you have enough belts or things that we as a yoga teacher is just, sometimes we require more props, and sometimes we can work with anything we have. But if you have it, it's much way nicer for you to conduct anything you would like to do. And keeping the program more flexible, because in the beginning we would put any type of meditation you can think of and any type of yoga class you can think of, and too much is just too much. So keeping it less of a every 5 minutes you have something to do, and more of a it's an option for you. If you would like to do the meditation in the morning before sunrise, you can. The door is open, and if you would like to have a guided meditation, it will be provided twice for the week. So figuring out what the balance is also very important to know who comes to your retreats. I'm really happy to say that most of our students come back and come back and come back. And we often make jokes that they just been 2 months ago with us. Do they really think we'll have new content for them? As a joke. It's not about the content most of the time. It's about the connections you create on those retreats. And even though some people know exactly what we're going to do in the last closing ceremony, they still come back. And it's exciting to be able to facilitate things like that for a bigger group of people. Or even if it's a small, intimate group of people, it's always special.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hey yogis, I just wanted to take a quick little break to talk about studio growth. Has your yoga studio's growth become stagnant? If you're like many studio owners I talk to, you've tried every marketing tactic under the sun. You started a blog, you're posting regularly on all the social media sites, running challenges, sending out newsletters, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, you're doing a ton of work and barely paying the bills. What if there was an easier way? A way to get new students regularly coming through the door without having to do so much work to get them there. A proven system that will consistently bring in 20 plus new paying students to your studio each and every month. Well, there is. Ron Medlin and his team at GetYogaStudents.com had developed a 3-step system that will help you quickly grow your yoga studio to 6-figure profits and beyond without being shackled to your business. So if you're ready to grow fast and you'd like the blueprint to help you get started, visit getyogastudents.com today to get the exact system Ron and his team uses to help his yoga studio clients add 10, 20, or even 30 new students every single month. On top of that, you get a free 45-minute consultation session. So if you're kind of like, I'm not really too sure about all this, I don't want to fork out a bunch of money without even knowing if this is going to work, head on over to getyogastudents.com, book a free consultation, and just talk with Ron. He's got so much knowledge, and him and his team are willing to work with you with your studio's needs. And once again, it's getyogastudents.com to start getting more students in your yoga studio. All right, back to the episode.
Yeah, I think, you know, hosting retreats, whether or not they're like a weekend or a day or a week long international, is something that, you know, a lot of teachers are interested in. Do you have any other tips for hosting successful retreats?
Yeah, what we say is always, if you would like to go somewhere, most likely people would like to come with you. So I always choose places that I really would like to go myself. And then it's so much easier to kind of course, all I'm saying is don't go somewhere that you've heard that the margins are good, or yeah, everyone goes to Morocco, let's all go to Morocco, or another destination that basically everyone ends up there. I find that if you would like to go there, and the universe will manifest itself that you have the best time with the people that you will be attracting just because simply you've already seen yourself there. So the other tip will be figure out the time of the year where people are most likely more inclined to join retreats. Beginning of the year is always a good timing because people start fresh and they would like to be setting intentions for the remaining of the year. So I adore doing retreats either January or February. And then there is also September and August, usually are good months, at least in Europe, where people can they really seek some escapes, or they really seek this time to relax. If you can plan around bank holidays, that's amazing, because sometimes people are committed to their practice, but they don't want to take days off. And if you can combine a bank holiday, knowing where your people come from or where your student base is a good way. Finding out cheap tickets beforehand is a good tip, because often people will say, I would love to come with you, but flying all the way to Sicily, for instance, right now is an arm and a leg. And although your prices seem super reasonable, adding the cost of the flight could be really something that can pull them away from the retreat. So what we normally do is we select the time, we select the team, we select the location, we check the flights, and then we think of a concept. Usually we go with a concept around yoga, food, and wine, because we would like to say to people that it's okay to be having fun without exaggerating. We're not promoting unhealthy lifestyle. What we're saying is that, yes, you practice yoga, but if you want to have a glass of wine, we will not stop you. And it attracts a completely different type of crowd than if you would just put a spiritual, let's say, a retreat. We might have a mantra chanting, but no one will even notice it, because they will still think, oh, we're going to this fun retreat where we were allowed to have a glass of wine. Most people don't even want to have the glass of wine in the end. So that's how we do it normally. And the tips are, do it like you really want to be there, and people will resonate with that, and they will be the one asking you when is the next one and when is the next one.
Yeah, definitely. I think that those are all really, really awesome tips. So thanks for sharing those. And something else I'm curious about is that, and this kind of relates to, you know, building up a following and finding people that will come on retreats with you. But you mentioned how, you know, you're still with a company that you were with, like, you know, years and years ago. And I'm curious how you've been able to create those meaningful relationships. So the meaningful relationships with your students on the mat, and then also those meaningful relationships with companies that you're working with, and taking those relationships off the mat.
So the way I say it is that most exciting things and the best thing about yoga is that you can have coffee with the people afterwards. I'm a big I'm a coffee addict, basically, which is not something I'm very proud of, but
no judgment.
After class, I really make sure that I have at least 1 or 2 hours in between. So you will be very surprised how people really would like to talk to you either before class or after class, and sticking around for a little bit longer and having those meaningful conversations is where the magic really happens. Because yes, as much as we would like to think of yoga as connecting body, mind, and soul, I like to think of yoga as connecting all of us together into this. We have different reasons why we end up on the mat, but what happens is those conversations afterwards and relationships and friendships, and most of the best friends I have right now are actually somehow related to yoga. Either we did a gig together, or we just admire each other's work, or you're a student of mine, or I'm a student of yours, or we've been to retreats together, and we just maintain that knowing that we are there for each other. And you don't have to see that same person that you started your yoga practice 10 years ago every year, but if I happen to be in Portugal where Marcia, a good friend of mine, is, and we started teaching yoga classes in the office together, and if I happen to be in the same district that she is, we would definitely do a gig together. So it happens quite organically. It happens quite, spontaneous. If I'm traveling, let's say, tomorrow to Sofia, where a good friend of mine also lives, most likely she'll be like asking me, can you teach in the studio I teach? Because we just share the love of yoga that we have. And it's never about really planning so much in advance. It just, if we happen to be in the same country, in the same city, we'd like to exchange these ideas about yoga, and we do it together. So in the office, I happen to have lots of girls that now are finishing their yoga teacher training, and they will be taking over leading classes in the office so that I can finally enjoy the classes that I was giving to others as a practitioner. And there's something special always that happens, that not everyone would like to practice with their colleagues, but the ones that do, we just happen to really like each other. Let's put it this way. And we might go together for trips, and we might end up having stronger bond just because we've done a couple of down dogs together. And if we move jobs, like it inevitably happens within a decade, we still help each other if we're in different departments. And yeah, it's just, I find that the whole thing of yoga being part of the office environment just helps everyone that is taking part. And even people that don't practice yoga with us, they just know, oh, those are the yoga chicks or the yoga boys, or because they even will tell me, someone tried to sell your yoga mats on the sample sale. And people that don't come to yoga classes will come and tell me, oh, they're doing something wrong with your yoga mat. So it's funny how things go.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the idea of, you know, turning your students into your friends, like having that time after classes to be able to go out for coffee. And there's a yoga studio in my hometown in Canada. And one of the things that I've always loved about that community is that there's like a group of older women, like they're all retired, and they come to so many classes at the studio, and they all go out for coffee after. And it's just something that I think is like a really special part of the practice. And it's like, you know, we come for the physical aspect or the mindful aspect, but we don't always, I guess, like come for the community. But I think, you know, the community is a really important aspect of that. So I really love that.
It's very important. And we make these jokes that the most important part of yoga Sunday, we have a routine that after my Sunday class, we always end up in the same place for hummus. Like whoever wants to join us, it's not a big secret that we'll end up there. So it's a tradition for a reason, because we're every Sunday there. So if people cannot find me, they most likely know I'm either at the yoga studio or the hummus place on Sunday. And if I'm teaching on Wednesday in the other location, it's going to be another restaurant next door. So we always end up in the same locations. And this small ritual that even if you haven't been in my class, but you just know, oh, she will be in this area around this time, this neighborhood, and we find each other. Amsterdam, after all, is quite a small city. It's not as big as people might think. And it's amazing to know your way around and people to find you, and when they see you, they will be like, oh, I'll come to your next class. Or it's very nice and welcoming environment. It was not like that in the beginning, but I think if you stick to a routine that works for you, more people will join you, and then you're never alone. We make fun. It's like, oh, where are the groupies? And if someone is missing from the group, we text them, we send them pictures of the lunch, and we are like, hey, we missed you at the practice. And or they will send pictures saying, I missed the practice. And it's more than just practicing. And to your point, turning students into friends, I fail to not be able to do that, in a sense of, I really truly think that if you're there authentic and people seem to like what you have to say about yoga and I'm available, there is this relationship going on regardless if you plan it or you don't plan it. And you don't have to come to all my classes, but if you come over after 3-4 months and we still like to grab a coffee and talk about life, I'm more than available to do that. And that's what charges me. And that's what I absolutely adore about the fact that I can do that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's super, super awesome. And so I think we've talked about this a little bit throughout the episode, but do you have any other, you know, business lessons you've learned throughout your career that you want to share today?
Yeah, for me, it's funny enough that things happen when the time is right, and you might not know when the time is right. So if you force something, I usually say don't. If you're trying too hard on any of the projects that you have, don't, because especially if you're in a field of yoga, things will come when you're ready and when the time is right. And you will feel it by simply being amazed how easy things are, how effortlessly things will work. So if you are stuck in a project that it just doesn't resonate with you anymore, but you invested too much to admit it to yourself, I usually say, instead of save yourself the lesson and drop it, reinitiate it when you feel like you're in the right space to do it. I've learned it the hard way on many of the things, because when you invest so much time or you want to prove that you can do it, it's sometimes we come from the ego place, and that's not very beneficial. Either you get exhausted or you get into those episodes of stressed out yoga teacher. And if you have 20 classes a week, ask yourself why you do it. Do you really need the money, or is it that you're trying to prove yourself that you can do 20 classes? So less is more in everything you do. Focus on your value proposition. What is it that really, really makes you unique? And we all have something that makes us unique. So even if you don't know what it is, ask your students, ask 5 of your really people that come to your classes and know what you stand for. Maybe you don't know it yet, but they'll be able to pinpoint it for you and stick to what works.
Yeah, I love those tips. And then do you have, we've talked about this a little bit as well, but do you have any other tips that we haven't talked about for newer yoga teachers, for people who are kind of like just starting off with their career?
I would say find your story, the one that faster resonates with people and they will be able to remember you. Especially here, you go to maybe, we have this one-fit cart and people can go to all the yoga studios. And I know many of my friends end up by the end of the week going to 10 yoga classes. And when I ask them, for instance, can you recommend in this studio one person, they always seem to only remember a few things about that person. So if you have a story, make sure that you have an intro that people can remember. And at least you'll be on top of people's minds when they're asked. So it might be something super simple. Like in my case, I'm Krimena, I work for Reebok. I wouldn't say it in the beginning of my classes. Actually, most of the students don't know that. But if I would like people to recognize that, I might be telling that in the beginning of the class or in the end of the class, and they will remember it if that's the intention I have. A good tip also is to be having the space and time and always be punctual with everything you do. Being late for classes and whatnot is just people remember that. You might do it once a year, but if you're not on time, people will always remember, oh, the teacher that is never on time. And simple things like that can really elevate you to a level that take it seriously, and this is a profession, and you've paid enough money to do the teacher training, and it's already a good start that you're showing and you're vulnerable and you're teaching your truth, and stick to it. If you asked me earlier if there was a moment where you would say give up, I would say if you have moments where you are discouraged, ask yourself if it's enough to just know that you can still do it with including all the disappointments, including if people don't resonate with something you have to say. You stay true to yourself, and then things turn out way better than you thought. So that will be, I don't think it's a very small tip, but it's just stick to it. And you don't even have to be that good. If you stick to it, people will know that you're in it for real. So maybe if I would give up after 1 or 2 years, no one would remember that I once wanted to teach classes. But since I've been doing it for so long, and I know that it's something I do from pure passion for it, and I like how I feel when I teach, and I like how transformative all those practices are, and I like seeing people's faces when they melt in a posture that they've never done before. And this, to me, gives me so much energy that any disappointment I might encounter will just mean nothing. It will just mean, I now know how to deal with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that those are great tips to keep in mind for newer yoga teachers. And yeah, I just love everything that you're talking about. And I appreciate this conversation today. I'm curious if people are, over in Europe and maybe want to go on a retreat or a workshop with you, or if they just want to like check you out online, follow you, see more about what you're about, where can people go to find you?
So I'm on Instagram, YOR Yoga, and then also same Facebook page, and then my website is with the same name. And I literally, anyone that is in Amsterdam anytime soon, or whatever you're listening to this, and you would like to pass by, I teach at Studio 191 at the moment in all three locations. And if you just see my name popping on the schedule and you would like to pass by and say hi, I'm more than happy to welcome you in my class, see what is this all about. And definitely we'll be going for either hummus after Sunday class or coffee. For the retreats, they are all posted on my website. This year we're going to Bali, Sicily, Bulgaria, and Cape Town in the end of the year. For the next year, we still don't know, but stay tuned to know more.
Amazing. So much good stuff happening. I was just pulling up your website and I want to look at where your retreats are happening. But it sounds like people can find you all over the world. One last question. Are your yoga classes in English or are they in Dutch? Yes.
So I do the English. I teach in English mainly because of that bad experience of failing in Dutch. And I can teach also in Bulgarian, and I've tried a couple of times in Italian, but it's never the same. I find that I come across more authentic in English, which is not even my native language. But the first time I remember when I had to go back home to Bulgaria to teach a yoga class in my own language, it was so difficult. I could not find the same words that I would express one thing in English that can be the equivalent in my own language. So classes are taught in English. If people don't understand something, and if I happen to know their language, I'll try to explain it in their language, but mostly English.
Amazing. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. I was working on a project with a yoga teacher friend this summer, and she's Italian, but she's a permanent resident of Canada. And so she's been in Canada for like, I think probably 9 years now, and she spoke no English when she moved to Canada, but she did her yoga teacher training and has done a number of trainings now in English. And so we were trying to create this YouTube channel in Italian. And it was so interesting. She's like, I just like don't how to teach yoga in Italian, which is such a funny experience when that's like your native language, but it's totally learning to speak in a different way and use different words. So yeah, it's interesting to hear that you had that same experience.
But it's also very nice when you go to places that you don't even speak the language and you follow a class. I often do it just for fun and to see if I resonate with the inhales and exhales more than anything else. And yes, maybe I'm missing a ton of useful information where the small adjustments and cues are being given, but actually just being able to follow things regardless of the language is super exciting. But yeah, English is mainly and very, very accessible to most people here in Holland. Actually, that's also one reason why it takes me so long to speak this language, because everyone speaks good English and you're kind of left without knowing of yet another language. So yeah, but most classes here in Amsterdam are actually in English.
Amazing. Yeah, definitely. I always like to practice yoga anywhere I am in the world. And I think it's always interesting to see how the classes go in a different language. But yeah, definitely good to know. So I'll make sure that there's a link to your website and all that good stuff on the show notes. And thank you again for this conversation. This has been so fun.
Thank you so much, Amanda, for your time. And I can't wait to hear this episode. And again, if anyone is in Amsterdam, please come and say hi.
All right. I hope that you enjoyed that episode of the podcast with Cremena from Your Yoga. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it and that you learned lots from it. As always, you can find notes and links with everything that we talked about on the show notes at mbomyoga.com. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Mastering the Business of Yoga. And if you're interested, you can join the private Facebook community at Yoga Business Badasses. This is a really great place if you want to connect with other people who are listening to the podcast, other people who are building yoga businesses right now, or just ask a question because you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. That's your place. I would love to have you. Just look up Yoga Business Badasses in the Facebook search bar, answer the questions, and I'll let you on in. All right, that's all for now. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.